Hello, Parsec Awards people, and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and on this excerpt show for you, I will present three segments. Hugo Awards discussion with James Palmer, Space 1999 discussion live at Dragon Con with Andrew Gaska, and part of my interview with best-selling author Graham McNeil. Enjoy.
You know, the Hugos have always been political, but now they're only political.
Yeah, man. Yeah, this is such a difficult issue to unravel, because I mean, there's the whole level of politics and ideology on both sides. And I honestly think that both sides really are sincere. I think that both sides think they know what they're talking about. I think that both sides are sincere in addressing issues that they think need to be addressed by this. Of course, the problem is that neither side sees the other side's point of view or sees it the way that side sees it. So, you know, what you end up with is and I'm just going to go the left and the right just for shorthand to make this simple and not have to keep renaming the puppies and all that. I keep wanting to kind of pare this down to the bare minimum to make it as understandable for our listeners that don't know a lot about this already as possible. I think that on the left, they are trying to go with the idea that the best stories, the best writers should win. And they feel like what the right side is doing here is sort of hijacking and force feeding their crowd and their material in at the expense of everybody else. On the other hand, I think what the right side thinks is that they have been wrongly excluded sort of on purpose due to the political agenda of the people who have been nominating and voting in the past. And so they are doing what they can to mobilize people who agree with them to overcome that roadblock. But again, I think both sides start to lose me when they start getting extreme with it. When the left side people start accusing the right side people in mass, right, ad hominem, of being racists and homophobes and reactionaries and all that, I think that's wrong. But when the people on the right start accusing the ones on the left of censorship and authoritarianism and all that, I mean, I think that's equally wrong. I think everybody on both sides needs to kind of take a breath and take a step back and focus on the actual issue here rather than bringing all this other crap that originally got stirred up by Gamergate in the video game industry into this.
Right.
So, I mean, do you agree with that, or do you think there's more to it that I'm kind of oversimplifying?
Well, I think to a person, you know, some of them are really that racist and that homophobic and that misogynistic. All you have to do is just read one of Vox Day's blog posts.
Well, let me ask you this while we're talking about the actual setup, the moon and everything. When I talk about this show with my friends who were, you know, kids like me when it was on, you know, in the mid-70s, and they watched it, but it has a reputation. I've never understood this. I want to see if you guys agree. It has a reputation. People will say, oh, yeah, the moon gets blasted out of orbit. That's so unrealistic. It's unbelievable. I'm like, okay, so a magical starship that flies 50,000 times the speed of light around the galaxy and beams people to planets with a half-human, half-alien first officer, that could happen tomorrow. But a show where they have basically Huey helicopters with rockets on the actual moon that does currently exist, as far as I know, last night it was still up there, that's completely unbelievable. What do you say to people that try to act like this show is the most unbelievable of the sci-fi TV shows?
Well, I mean,
I don't get it.
It all comes down was it Asimov who?
Yeah, Asimov. Yeah,
Asimov
wasn't thrilled with it.
He started
the ball rolling. Yeah,
yeah. He had complained about the science involved in that. But the thing is that, like, that's what is amazing about metaphysics today. It's like there are, just because we don't know how something can happen doesn't mean that it can't happen. And that's one of the things I tried to explain in the book. I give a bunch of different reasons why, how could this happen, you know, but it, in the end, it doesn't matter how it happened. It mattered that it did happen, and somehow they survived, because that's what they would be concerned about, you know. One of the things I love about Space 1999 is the idea of the mysterious unknown force.
The muff.
Yes. which you know, the guiding hand of God, if you will, mm-hmm. That is involved in this. And that's one of the things that I've been doing with the series, is that we're trying to make it clear that there is a purpose for all this. And if we get to go to the completion, which is, there are 10 graphic novels planned out. This is just the first two. If we do get to go to completion, there's a beginning, middle, and end to all this. So there will be a payoff.
Mankind has a destiny in the stars is basically where they were always going with that.
Yeah.
At least in the first season. We'll get to that in a minute. I can't help but wonder what Isaac Asimov thought of Battlestar Galactica in 1978. If he thought Space 1999 was just completely unbelievable with the science, what did he think of... I mean, I love Galactica, but come on. I mean, 1999 at least is more, you know, trying to be sort of scientific.
He probably gave up after Star Wars.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think maybe part of the problem is that Space 1999, it's basically 2001 A Space Odyssey, the show. I mean, that's basically what it is, right? And it may be that it has such trappings of realism in a lot of ways that it makes the scientific inaccuracies more obvious than a show that just says, screw it, this is rock and roll, you know, this is space opera, we're not even pretending to be. Is that...
Yeah, I think that's what people don't realize when they're watching it, they've raised the bar. I mean, and yeah. Again, we're not talking about the second season.
Right.
I mean, they used to say transporters were impossible, and now they're you know, they transformed a particle from, like, 13 feet from one side of the room to another.
Did a fly get in there with it?
No, unfortunately not.
I was going to mention this to you. I don't feel like I've read even half of your current catalog, and yet, because there's so much, I think in pure word count, I've probably read more of your stuff than almost a lot of other authors I've read for 20 years, just because, you know, and I think that kind of brings in the idea that, you know, as with the Pulp Factory Awards, the Pulp Factory is an organization that encourages new pulp and the return of the old pulp sensibilities of writing. And I think that that's a lot of what you and other writers for Black Library and other similar organizations do, is kind of bring back the old pulp mentality of telling rousing, colorful, exciting stories.
Absolutely.
And in quantity as well as quality. I mean, that's, you know.
I was going to say, yeah, quantity is very much part of the pulp thing, that there's there's always something new to read. But, you know, every time you glance at the website, there's a new anthology, a new short story, a new novel. There's always something there. And yep. That's, yeah, you're right. That's very much part of it.
Yeah, I consider, I mean, I know that Black Library is now the fifth largest science fiction publisher in the world, which is amazingly impressive. But I also consider them one of the biggest pulp publishers. Would you think that's fair?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the worlds we create, the stories we tell in those worlds, you know, that there's at the surface level, yes, they're very broad brush strokes. They're, you know, there are all sorts of obvious evil, but there's also, you know, going a bit deeper, there's you know, shades of gray to that, because even the good guys in 48 are just less evil than evil guys in some ways, you know. But then again, but the deeper you look at it, which is one of the things I like about this universe, is that on the surface it appears to be fairly black and white, but there are entire shades of gray beyond that. And once you go deeper, where you look at things like the Inquisition,
yeah,
things they do are by any method of measurement utterly terrible and horrible. But then you look at the things that they face, the things that they deal with, and you think, well, actually, you know what? These guys are witch hunters and demon hunters in a world where demons and witches actually do exist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not just taking out their frustrations on women by being witch hunters. They actually are fighting demons and witches. And I think, yeah, at its core, yes, we're all trying to tell a rousing, exciting, swashbuckling, seat of the pants, hanging on by your fingernails, action adventure tale. But, you know, given the universe has had 30-odd years to mature, to develop, to acquire, you know, accreted sedimentary layers of meaning and depth to it, that, you know, you can tell an unashamedly pulp story in it, and yet still there's room in that universe for depth, for meaning and themes beyond just the, you know, the shooty death porn space.
Yeah.